All right, 5 after the hour. Let's welcome in Robin Washit from Husker Online. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Good. If I, if Gonzaga would have won last night, we'd be spending a lot of the show today talking about their place in history. Their place in history is still there, but they're 31-1. Where is the place in history for this Baylor team that ran through the NCAA tournament by winning by 24, 13, 11, 9, 19, and 16, those last two in the national semifinals and final? Where do we place this Baylor team, you think?
It was crazy. Is I don't think people truly understood how good they were until literally the last 40 minutes of the season, to where they got put up against the team that was being talked about as potentially one of the greatest of all time, and they completely dominated them from start to finish. And I think that really magnified how good that Baylor team actually is and how not only talented they are on the front end, but how deep they are and how good their bench is, to where you can make substitutions 8, 9, even 10 deep, and there's not much drop off. And yeah, I think when you really kind of sit back and look at it, what they did during this tournament, and had their regular season not been disrupted the way that it was, they would have had an opportunity just to maybe do what Gonzaga did then during the regular season. So it's one of those things that you don't really appreciate it until the season's over, and you kind of take into account not only what they did against Gonzaga, but then that kind of puts into a different perspective the entire NCAA tournament and their entire regular season.
So the season is now over. I think, us that went through the entire season, whether being involved in calling games or covering it, it was a roller coaster, but we made it from the start to the finish. Maybe one guy who is really disappointed the season is over because now he has nothing to do today, tomorrow, Thursday, or Friday. How do you explain Bo Borowski being one of the national championship game officials? First of all, he seems like he does every single game in college basketball.
Well, certainly every Big Ten game. I'm just glad the rest of the country got to see or get the full Bo Borowski experience right out of the gate when he hit Jalen Suggs with that quote-unquote charge call that got him two fouls and completely disrupted Gonzaga's rotation. That's what he does. And that's what he does better than anybody, is to really change the entire dynamic of a game and everyone that he calls.
News today, we were in that stretch last summer where Nebraska basketball would wait till Tuesday to break some news, and then we'd have Robin on. What does the addition, Fred has an opening on his staff, and he goes with Nate Lenzer, who he's got familiarity with from Iowa State and also with the Bulls, adding him to his staff. What role does he play? And then what do you see in the new role for Doc Sadler?
He is basically the new right-hand X's and O's guy for Fred Hoiberg, to where his knowledge and experience at the highest levels of basketball, that would be the Bulls, or the head coach of the Bulls G League team, or his experience at Iowa State, or what have you. The guy has had success and a great amount of experience at every level. And everywhere he's gone, there's a couple snippets of some of the NBA players he coached in the graphic Nebraska put out, but really everywhere he's gone, whether it's be his guys at Iowa State or professionally, they all comment on just how important he was to their individual development as players. And whether that's becoming good college players to pros, or pros to, NBA all-stars, he has had quite the impact from a developmental standpoint. So that is going to be where he makes his biggest impact, not only in, designing game plans and doing scouting reports and all that, but the day-to-day practice instruction that he's going to provide. And it's like that wealth of knowledge and ability to take players to the next level is going to be huge, not only for the guys currently on the roster, but that's certainly going to go immediately into Nebraska's recruiting pitch. It's like, you come here, not only do we have Fred Hoiberg, who's put guys in the league, but, we have a guy that was an NBA assistant and a G League head coach in his own right that has personally coached, NBA all-stars. So, that's a huge feather in Nebraska's cap. And the fact, when you pair it with their ability to hold on to Doc Sadler and keep his wealth of knowledge and experience, to get him in a role where he doesn't have to really worry about you know, kind of the day-to-day grind of being a full-time assistant, you know, whether it be with recruiting or whatever, he gets to kind of sit back and do more of the, you know, the game management mm-hmm. stuff. I think that's really his wheelhouse. So it works out for him to where he's able to stay on staff and have a very key role in what Nebraska does, while also getting a guy like Nate Lensner, who is, you know, right up there as, you know, one of the best player development coaches that you're going to be able to find, especially to bring to Nebraska.
What's Nebraska getting out of the 7-foot Lithuanian?
Oleg Koyanets?
Exactly.
Yeah. Koyanets. That's how you pronounce it. I actually had to request a phonetical pronunciation on that. So there you go. Yeah, so they got a 7-footer, first and foremost, who, albeit he's lean, I think he's only around 220-some pounds, but you watch some of his tape and some of his highlights, kind of like Eduardo Andre, in the sense that he is kind of long and you know, a bit lanky, but he's got plenty of coordination and touch around the rim. He can dribble. He's got some, you know, like I said, some athleticism to him, and, you know, quite a bit of skill for a guy with that frame. So that's a great starting point where, you know, if all you have to do is pack on a little bit of muscle on him, and you're completely getting the ideal package of what Fred Hoiberg mm-hmm. wants in a five, I think that's a pretty nice get at this point in the process. And, you know, I think he is a guy that if things go the way Nebraska wants, he'll probably redshirt next year and give himself a year, not only to get a year of strength and conditioning, but to just kind of acclimate to American basketball. You know, he's only been in the U.S. for maybe a year or two. So, I mean, just getting used to the American style of play and also, you know, living in another country, especially being on your own in college, I think that'd be pretty valuable to him. So I think that's the ideal plan for him to where he'll be ready to, you know, see the court and make his mark beginning in 2022-23 when he'd be paired with, you know, a third-year Eduardo Andre.
Yep.
And then Blaze Cada, 6'10" center from Coffeyville that they also got a commitment from. So in a year or so, Nebraska's front court is going to look different than maybe it ever has before with, you know, 7 foot, 6'11", 6'10", as your top three options at the five spot.
Help us here from this standpoint. We have a love-hate relationship sometimes with recruiting rankings, and there's so much focus on the football side. But Nebraska basketball is sitting in a nice spot at 18 in the Rivals rankings for basketball recruiting. Why is it nothing to roll your eyes about with basketball recruiting when it comes to rankings like some will do with football?
Well, it's a smaller sample size, and so the guys that are being brought here generally are going to have immediate impacts, whereas football, you know, it takes maybe a couple years for a freshman to be ready to play, you know, especially at the Power 5 level. That's not usually the case, you know, with basketball, where guys are so tailor-made, ready to play, where you get a five-star Bryce McGowan's, he should be ready to hit the ground running come this fall. And then, you know, you got a JUCO guy in Keshe Tominaga, who's absolutely tearing up the junior college ranks for the second year in a row. You know, and Wilhelm Breidenbach, who is playing in one of the best, you know, basketball leagues in California right now at Mater Dei. And so, I mean, the level of competition these guys are playing against already should make them immediate impact type players. And so when you have a class that is regarded like that nationally, full of guys that are expected to come in and make instant contributions, you know, that's where it kind of becomes different than football, in the sense that you can actually count on the majority, and if not all of that class, you know, to come in and be factors right off the bat. Whereas football, sometimes you don't see the rewards of those class rankings until a few years down the road, and obviously a lot can change in those few years.
Your thoughts on Tim Miles taking the job at San Jose State?
It's, you know, I'm not surprised he ended up getting a job this year, because I'm pretty sure his money from Nebraska just
last month
either just ran out. Yeah, last month. So, you know, that, I mean, it was time for him to go find something. You know, I still think his best spot would have been New Mexico. I think he would have actually absolutely killed it there with the resources they have in place and, you know, his experience in the Mountain West. But San Jose is interesting because they've kind of been a dormant program for a long time and haven't really had much of an athletic budget. But it seems like over the past couple years, that athletic department has kind of recommitted itself to where, you know, they are making a lot of investments into football, and then clearly now with basketball, you know, going and getting a guy like Tim Miles, I think that shows that, you know, maybe that's a program that could be up and coming very quickly. And, you know, with Tim's track record of building program, that might be a pretty nice landing spot for him, even if it might not have been, in my opinion, the most ideal fit when this process started.
And don't you think, I mean, Minnesota has the seventh guy that goes into the portal today. Indiana wins the portal by getting three guys to come back to Indiana. You're hired at this process. You know, the next signing period opens up in, 9 days? But there's an abundance of players in the portal. I would think it would be an easier transition if you need to walk in and say, hey, we only have five guys here. We need to go get seven or eight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's basically the same philosophy that Nebraska tried to do with Fred Hoiberg, where, you know, he basically just cleared the roster out and went and tried to get guys. And again, that was back when guys still had to sit out. And so he was going under the old philosophy of get some sit out transfers to pair with your immediate guys. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. You can go get guys that can plug and play as starters from day one with the upcoming transfer rule that I guess it still hasn't technically been passed, but it will when all is said and done. And so, you know, I think now is probably the easiest time than ever to rebuild a roster because you have that luxury finally for the first time. And with the transfer portal being what it is, you know, recruiting, I mean, I guess it's been harder to retain players, but it's also never been easier to go get players because of just how vast the available talent is, both at the high school, junior college, and then the D1 transfer route.
Well, look at how things can change so quickly. The season ends, and people aren't happy with Mark Turgeon. His agent floats his name for the Oklahoma job, and people there are going, okay, what are we doing? And then this past weekend, Maryland gets two really good transfers, and all of a sudden, I think they'll probably start showing up in a bunch of preseason top 15s. It's crazy, that world right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the one, I guess, again, the downside is the idea of building a roster over, let alone 4 years, maybe even two or three, has never been harder, but you can get good very quickly. And you look at the NCAA tournament as the prime example of that. Baylor's roster loaded with transfers. You know, Gonzaga got transfers. And, you know, go down the list. You know, seemingly every round, the teams that were advancing were ones that were kind of pieced together very late in the process through the transfer market. So, I mean, it is the new reality of how you build a college basketball program now. I mean, the transfer market is so you know, so abundant with players that, you know, are leaving for all varieties of reasons. You know, usually kind of transfers are always kind of outcast black sheep guys that left for a reason or, you know, got kicked off a team or whatever. Now you got guys that are in perfect standing with their team, but they just want a different opportunity for whatever reason. And so it's, like I said, it's a new era of how you assemble a college basketball roster. And there are pros and cons for sure, but, you know, it's a game that you have to play if you want to survive.
Hey, well, one final one here. You were in the scrum with Ryan Held yesterday. Do you foresee Nebraska going into the fall with six scholarship running backs?
It's hard to do. You know, when we talk about basketball transfers, football's becoming, you know, kind of the same type of deal where, you know, if you're not happy with where you are, it's never been easier to go find a place that is going to provide you a better opportunity. You know, to just if you're a guy that's been here 2-3 years and you're looking kind of at a realistic being fourth or fifth on the depth chart, I guess, you know, what's the incentive to stick around and not play when you can go somewhere and play? So at this point, just kind of given the way that collegiate athletics are, I would not expect all six of those guys to be here. You know, maybe they do, but I would probably be surprised just because of the era we live in where, you know, you can very easily find yourself an opportunity to go play and play a lot where you don't have to grind it out for 3 years and hope to see some playing time as a senior. Those days are gone.
And essentially, outside of what Stepp has done at USC and Ramir Johnson and his 29 carries, we don't know anything else about the rest of the running backs. They haven't played enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, I mean, that just makes it a wide-open guessing game, really, where you just assume Marquis Stepp is going to be the number one, but you know, we've never seen him in a Nebraska uniform. And, you know, we've got such a small sample size with everybody else, even the guys that have played. have played so sparingly that they're unknowns in their own right. And maybe a guy that's right up there is the potential number two, Sevion Morrison, has never even played a single snap. So, you know, it's going to be one of these storylines of the spring, is just how that position kind of comes together and who ends up being the odd man or men out when all said and done going into the summer. Because, like I said, keeping six scholarship backs happy in today's era is darn near impossible.
Great stuff, Robin. I appreciate it. I know this week has been busy. Great work by you and the rest of the guys at Husker Online.
Thank you, sir.
That's Robin Washut, joins us every Tuesday. Nebraska basketball gets a commitment yesterday. They are active in the transfer portal. I had a tweet that was shared with me. They are really, really excited in San Jose for Tim Miles. In this press release, so his good friend, Nico Medved, who is now at Tim's old stomping grounds at Colorado State, was at Drake, their best of friends, is quoted in the press release. How many times do you see a fellow coach in your own conference be quoted? Nico Medved is calling Tim Miles a home run hire, but they are all in on his social media on what they're going to do. That's a good landing spot for him. It's a really good spot for him to get back in the game at a place where, you know, people aren't going to pay attention to him. But if he does something and, you know, Tim likes the attention and he'll bring it to the program, people start talking about them. Wonder if you will see San Jose State playing back in this area. I don't know that you'll see him in Lincoln, but maybe 67th and Center, maybe downtown. All right, 121. Tom Chattel, who knows a lot about what's going to go inside of the building downtown next week. He will join us. Plus, Tom, today he had a chance to talk to Roger Dixon from Mecca about what maybe the College World Series will look like inside the ballpark and outside of the ballpark. Tuesdays with Tom's coming next.